Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ask Catherine. We're recording today on November 9th. It's Thursday for publication tomorrow on November 10th. Questions as of Monday, November 6th. And again, as always, thank you for your questions. Well, Carolyn and I are finally stationary after months of driving and plane
flying.
flights. Yeah, so I'll be stationary for a whole week. I'm excited. We have some great questions today. So let's just dive in. Okay, cash and precious metals. First one is yours, Carolyn.
Okay, the first one is long, so you can read it, read the whole thing if you go into the script, but it's from daily@charter.com together with Money Moves, and it's about use of cash and credit cards. And the interesting part, it says, according to an annual study from the Federal Reserve that tracks instruments that the U.S. adults use to pay for day-to-day transactions, 40% of payments were made with paper, which includes cash, checks, or money orders in 2015. And just 7 years later, that nearly halved. It was nearly cut in half. And paying with cash specifically has been a similar fall to just 17% of payments made with coins and notes in 2022. Predictably, the share of plastic payments is up 13% in the last 7 years. On a dollar, and I don't quite understand this exactly what they're saying, but on a dollar value basis, bank and online payments, I'm not sure what online payments are, as opposed to, you know, whether it's ACH, but cash, bank and online payments account for most of the actual money changing hands, with some 40%, 43% of total dollars spent with the two electronic methods in 2022, while cash's share sinks even further to just 5%. It's all very interesting, but I don't think they're using the language precisely enough for us to quite understand it. The next point is that vendors themselves are increasingly encouraging customers to keep pay cash. Some 2.93% of all cash payments came with a discount as vendors tried to avoid the swipe fees, which are 2 to 4% of the transaction, a surcharge that reportedly sets the average U.S. family back more than $1,000 a year.
That's incredible.
And the good news is there's a younger generation that's surprisingly interested in dealing in cash, Generation Z, whatever years that is. But that's interesting.
Next one is yours too.
Yes, this one is about sterling silver flatware. Our subscriber, who's a good friend of mine, says in my family, we have a number of sterling silver flatware sets. Wants to know, it's not a very liquid or easy to deal in, but it must have some inherent value due to the fact that it has melt value. Is that correct? And so we asked Franklin Sanders for his response to that question. And he says, sterling silver's flatware is required by federal law to be marked sterling or 0.925, indicating the item is 92.5% pure silver. Think about it. A sterling silver spoon that weighs at 1 troy ounce, 31.1034 grams, is really just 1 ounce piece of 92.5% silver or 0.925 ounces of pure silver. If you take sterling to any of those gold and silver buying shops, they will pay you 40 to 50% of the silver value. Not a great deal. If anyone has a sufficient quantity of sterling flatware, we can have it melted and take the proceeds in cash or silver bars or rounds. After all the shipping and smelting and charges, the customer realizes about 90% of the silver value. This is complicated because many sterlingware items are not solid silver, but contain epoxy bases or stainless blades. They are basically silver foil over a non-silver base. Bottom line is, if you can buy sterling silver at something below melt value, why not? However, if someone has a large quantity of it, in the long run, they would be better served by swapping it for more liquid, for some more liquid form of silver.
Right. It's always great to be able to send that to Franklin and get a, you know, It's a very detailed expertise. You need somebody who really knows what they're talking about. Okay, no questions in where to stash your cash. And then the next is in geopolitical and geopolitics and financial markets. Hi, Catherine. Finally, thank you for your world-saving work. As a recent college graduate who was brainwashed by an East Coast liberal arts education, Solaris guidance helped me find reality. My question, do you think a cyber pandemic or cyber terrorist attack in the U.S. is likely before 2025? Especially in the context of the escalating Middle East conflict. This January, the WEF declared in their annual meeting that the cyber terrorist attack would occur within 2 years. Additionally, at the same meeting, the Albanian prime minister alleged Microsoft, the FBI, and other named entities had verified Iran was responsible for the recent cybercrime that threatened to delete the Albanian public sector data. He went on to hint that there would be a cyber attack that could potentially collapse the internet itself and alluded it would be connected with Iran. Whitney Webb, in her analysis of this WEF prediction, suggested the event would be used to take everyone off the internet and cattle tag us at the ISP level before letting us back on. This would also disrupt operations of banks and businesses. Based on Solari content I've been listening to, it does not seem like the infrastructure is yet in place for such an engineered collapse. To nuke the internet and the physical infrastructure dependent on it, I imagine they would need the control grid and CBDC rails ready into place, would they not? Not necessarily. This is one way to force everybody into a digital ID. So it is theoretically possible that they could do it in 2024 if they need to accelerate. My guess is it's more likely in 2025, but there's no doubt if you did it at the same time you brought in the World Health Organization IHR amendments, you could really exercise a tremendous amount of control. So my bet is greater chance for 2025, but I think unfortunately we have to be ready for the possibility of just such a scenario. And then they provide links to the recent Whitney Webb interview. I should just mention, I'm going to be interviewing Whitney Webb for the third quarter wrap-up. She wrote our theme on AI, and I will be interviewing her on the 21st. So if you have any questions for Whitney, make sure you send them in and I'll ask her. And I'll ask her about her confidence that something can happen in 2024.
And you discussed this in your Mercola interview that we just posted too.
Correct. Okay, banking. Hi, Carolyn, Catherine, and team. I've been with the European Post Office for years for managing my few coppers. Next year, the post office becomes a bank, namely PNB Paribas Fortis, so I guess it's merging. But what I have trouble understanding is the new bank contact Visa debit card. It's still a strictly debit card, but supposedly with more advantages against the debit card I use today. I suspect it has something to do with CBDCs. I don't trust a collusion with a credit card partner. I have no idea. I have no idea what the difference is. I'm sure there are differences, but it doesn't necessarily have to do. It may have to do with fast payments, but I have no idea. And if anybody does know, so they're switching from, they have a, you know, it's the difference between a Bank contact Visa debit and the old bank contact Maestro. So if anybody knows, I'd love to hear about it.
Okay, this the next one is in other investments retirement. Hi, Catherine. I work in the film business and we are experiencing an industry-wide strike. I've been unemployed since March. We've been offered an early withdrawal for our 401k. Under hardship with no penalties, just taxes due. Would it be a good idea to take advantage of this program? I don't trust Vanguard and think I can do better with it. I'm 56 and I'm considering taking the money out and rolling it into my Roth. I would like to invest in a farmstead in Tennessee. I'm in the 30% tax bracket and it's around $300,000. I'm currently in Massachusetts and this state is being run into the ground. That sounds like a great idea to me. And yes, this is an opportunity when you're not 70 and a half to get out of a 401k without any kind of penalty, that there aren't very many opportunities to do that. And yeah, you can put it in a Roth IRA.
Well, I think it's a great idea to get it into a Roth. If you want to stay in the system, I think getting it into the Roth is a great idea. And of course, it depends on If you want to do a piece of that Roth in a self-directed, you might be able to find a situation in Tennessee where you can invest in farmland. Of course, it can't be a residence if you're doing it through a self-directed IRA. But I would just make sure before you do it, you pro forma, you just do a pro forma and make sure you understand exactly what's involved and what the tax ramifications, if any, are. But it sounds like a great idea to me. Okay, question. Please comment on Bitcoin and crypto assets. So we put in links. I did a 3-hour interview with Mercola on Bitcoin with a Bitcoin expert. It was a bit of a debate. And then I did an interview with Harry Blaser after I did my big due diligence on Bitcoin, as well as got some of the attorneys who helped Carol and me to do a report on the Bitcoin, how Bitcoin and cryptocurrency are treated from tax purposes. And then we put a link to the new interview I did with Mercola, where it was very interesting. He came into, the reason we did the big 3-hour, Carolyn, was he thought Bitcoin was a real sort of, is really going to help us get to freedom.
So, yeah, he's changed his mind.
So we go through the 3-hour debate, and he, you know, Mercola's a very smart guy, and he listens. So he listened to the whole debate. And then later he emailed me, I don't know, because I'd warned they're going to dump it. It's going to be a big dump. So when they dumped it, he wrote back and he said, you know, my information is they're going to destroy Bitcoin. And I wrote back and I said, no, I don't think the pump and dumps are over. I why wouldn't they pump it again? I don't think it's over. So in fact, it wasn't over. And as you know, I think they probably will pump it again, but this time he said Bitcoin's a scam. And I said, well, I think it's a prototype. But he's come full circle. And it was funny because, you know, when I got that message, he said, you're right about Bitcoin. I just had to laugh my head off because it came, you know, after 3 years of being screamed at mightily by a lot of people. So I try not to let those things get under my skin. But, you know, it's hard when you're investing in somebody because you're a people investor and they're telling you should do Bitcoin instead.
Well, yeah. And
like, well, then I wouldn't be investing in you. Is that what you want?
And then every time we do, you know, talking about solutions and the larger problem, we get questions. What about Bitcoin? As if it's going to save everything, or crypto.
Here's the problem. We don't have a financial problem. We have a governance problem. You can't solve a governance problem with a financial product, any financial product. You know, I have the same fight with the gold guys. So,
right.
I mean, if a whole society puts all their money in golds and puts it in a vault, we all stare at it. Guess what's going to happen to the economy?
Right.
End of the economy. Okay.
Yes. It says, please comment on a 2-year note ladder investment where I flip every 6 months to lock in these high rates. Where will the rates be in 6 months, 12 months, and January 2025? I just wanted to explain what a 2-year note ladder investment, I had to look it up myself. It's just a way of investing a little bit. If you started with a chunk of money, you would want some percentage of it at different maturities. And in order to do that, the first one that you do is like three months. And then the next one is 6 months. And the next one is 12 months. And the next one, you know, so on, spread out so that they will each mature, you know, you'll have a new maturity every 3 months. That's what a ladder investment is. And he wants you to predict what investment interest rates are going to be, Catherine.
Right.
What do you think?
I have no idea what interest rates are going to be. But if I had to guess, I think the Fed is going to keep them relatively high. I think the squeeze is on. And I don't expect them to come down a lot over the next year or two. So at the same time, if you look at how attractive it is for savers to lock in a 5%, you know, so when the long treasury hit 5% a week or so ago, you know, a lot of people jumped in and bought and crashed it down about 19 basis points, boom, right away. Because, you know, the ability to lock up a really attractive 5% long-term. Now, I have no interest in buying treasuries or financing the U.S. government. But if you can buy a strong productive company's debt or a strong municipal at an attractive rate right now, it's very, very attractive. But if you're laddering, then you run the interest rate risk. But I think in the next year or two, the probability is the Fed is going to keep it high. The exception is if they really take down the economy in a major, major way, once that's done, you're going to have you know, rates could come down, or the market rates could come down. I think the Fed's going to be pushing to hold them high because they're in the going direct reset and it's hardball. So that would be my guess. Okay, so the next one I've done some research on, but I haven't done enough. So we're going to move that, if it's okay with you, Carolyn, to next week.
Okay.
So we have a little, I only got the, somebody was asking a question about the fee schedule, but I just got the fee schedule this morning. So I want some time to do some research. And so I apologize for that, but we'll do that next week. Okay, so then we move to living equity. Hi, Catherine and Carolyn and team. I recall you speaking of a typewriter you recently got that allows you to insert a thumb drive. So you can, you know, it's a manual typewriter, but you can create a digital file and move it over to your computer. And then they wanted to know John Titus's bike. So so we put the links in. It's called a free write. And I put a link to get free write. And then Titus's, John's bike is a Marin Larkspur. And I was really interested in buying one, but you can't, trying to get one in the Netherlands was impossible. So I got something else. And, but I also put a link to the USB typewriter, which is an alternative to FreeWrite, but FreeWrite's the one I have. No questions in equity overview. So then we go to feedback, and somebody is really appreciative of Spiritual Science Academy with Thomas Meyer, and they sent a note about how much they liked it, but also gave us a link to rudolfsteineraudio.com, which is a great website. It offers a lot of audios if you, you know, if you want to listen to the Rudolf Steiner books or lectures. And so, and they also, we put in the links for Thomas's publishing company, Perseus, and you can get, he's got a Europa magazine, but they do it in English as well, The Present Age. We also put a link to Steiner Books, which was the group that had that great, great booth at the Western Price. Okay, the next one is Carolyn, is yours.
Yes. Okay. I was shocked to hear that Reiner Fulmich was arrested in Mexico last week. Understand after his arrest, he was flown back to Germany, where he's incarcerated in a town in southern Germany. He's been accused of stealing the equivalent of $350,000 from the Corona Investigative Committee. There are additional details in the link that's below. As you know, Fulmich continued to carry his work on his ICIC website, and the Corona Investigative Committee lost most of their audience after his departure. Arresting Fulmich is a miscarriage of justice, and sadly, the Corona Committee seems to be more worried about a few dollars or euros versus the well-being of children who are real victims in this crisis. Fulmich had a busy law practice in Germany with 30 attorneys, and he worked for Corona Committee pro bono most of the time. What is wrong with Wolfgang Wodarg thinking? I'm under the impression he's behaving like Malone in the lawsuit against Bregenz. Wodarg is enabling Ms. Fisher's unacceptable behavior. Ms. Fisher should have been let go of the Corona team. She does not have all the skill set for this work, not Dr. Fulmich. It would be wonderful if someone could talk about Wodarg. Wodarg is a real asset, but this is a huge lapse of judgment that one, and one that could potentially serve as a deterrent for other attorneys considering joining the medical freedom movement. And there's a link. We have links explaining the situation from Vivienne's point of view, and we're familiar with Vivienne and worked with her. I will say, as an attorney, I heard all sorts of complaints from clients about their previous attorneys did nothing. And that's because they couldn't see it. There are all sorts of things attorneys do that are a lot of work, take lots of time, take lots of talent, and nobody sees. And I'm guessing that that's what Vivienne did. They're coordinating three, you know, hundreds or dozens anyway of witnesses and all sorts of things. So there is a link to a video, an interview of Vivienne, and she explains that, and my understanding is that she's not the primary person who brought this to the attention of the authorities, but she's the one who's sort of gotten most of the blame. But what she basically says is that money that people put up was missing. Reiner told her that he had spent the money on his house and couldn't give it back, and didn't offer to make any kind of reparations or cover the money, which left the committee without money. And they felt that they were responsible responsible for the money and could get into trouble if they didn't do something about trying to get it back. So that is the other version. But Catherine, you have some familiarity about this from another perspective. So why don't you explain that?
So I've dealt and worked with all three people. The first thing I will say is, in my experience, Wolfgang Vodark is one of the highest integrity people I've ever known or met or dealt with. I can't say enough good about him and his work. You just need to flip your opinion of Wolfgang 180. That's number one. Number two, I was did a series of interviews with the Corona Committee, and Reiner asked me to run the economic section of the mock trial that he did. And I had several experiences with him where he acted, he basically intentionally broke promises that he'd made to the group. And so I dropped because I just said, this guy is not a person of integrity and I just don't want to be involved. And part of it was he promised repeatedly that he would make clear it was a mock trial, not real trial. But I was over at a press conference with Brussels and he did the absolute honest opposite. And it was frightening given how adamant, people had really made him swear on a stack, just Reiner, promise us you won't do this. And then, of course, he did it. I dropped. And at that point, I stopped associating with Reiner. I've only had a couple of different dealings with Vivian, and she, everything tells me she's a person of real integrity. I've had nothing but good experiences with her. I would say, in terms of doing the committee, Reiner did a great job in terms of interviews. He's very charming. He could translate back and forth between German and English, and so he had more media experience than Vivian, but she's quite capable, and I've had very good experiences with her. I do know that they were stunned when sort of Reiner disappeared. The money, just their funding, they thought they had a lot of funding to do what they were doing. And so it left them and Oval Media in quite a lurch, caused quite a bit of pain. And then, of course, Reiner runs off to Mexico. All I can tell you is my experience with Vivian and Wolfgang are that they are excellent people. And I absolutely, if they say something, I believe it. I trust them. And that is not my experience with Reiner. So, I don't know what the details of who said what to whom, but I absolutely believe that the prosecutors are acting in, within the law and doing something that is not the persecution of, they're not persecuting somebody for political reasons. They're persecuting somebody because money disappeared. It's kind of shocking the extent to people which people believe it's a political persecution. And you can understand that because if you look at what the Germans did to Suchet Bhakti, there's no reason these days to trust the prosecutors. And that's unfortunate because, when they're acting legitimately, no one believes them. It's the wolf-wolf problem. Okay, so
Right.
now we turn to Mr. Global, and this was a question we did last week, but we had recording problems because Catherine was driving in the car. Let me read it. Please see attached MPF ordinance from Hong Kong. Claimant reaching 60 years of age of retirement funds required to declare permanently ceased all employee with no intention of becoming employed, self-employed again. Offense liable to penalty of 100,000 fine and 1 year imprisonment, not limited to Hong Kong, but international. According to MPF staff, please kindly suggest a way, if possible, to protect one's sovereignty and right to future work in any part of the world. It's compulsory to fill out this form in order to claim one's own MPF money. Okay, this is very frightening. I don't understand the system of what's happening in Hong Kong, but basically, to get your retirement funds, you have to promise you'll never work again. And if you do, it's subject to a $100,000 fine and 1 year imprisonment. Which is outrageous. I mean, this is absolutely a violation of sovereignty. And the only way I know to protect your sovereignty is to walk out on your MPF money. I don't know how much you have. Obviously, if this was in the United States, you'd litigate because they don't have the right to put this term and condition on your retirement. So I just think this is a very horrible situation. I mean, in theory, if you have another citizenship, you can sign this form, get your money, and then go off and earn money elsewhere. But Looks to me like you'll never get back to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the jurisdiction issue. Vera Sharev can't go back to Germany because she's under prosecution for, her last speech in Berlin. Again, this is why people assume the German prosecutors are acting, in non-legitimate ways. Okay, no questions in health, food, and the great poisoning, even though we spent the last month in, just completely embroiled in it. Many, many great conferences. And then no questions in energy, environment. One question in bizarro world. You want to take this, Carolyn?
Yes, and it's interesting, weird that it's categorized under Bizarro World. And it says if RFK Jr. is supporting Israel, then he's not the good man he purports to be. He has not made a major statement on Israel since October 7th. And I would expect that he will be coming out with something that has been thought through. There was a short clip of him speaking since then about the Palestinians not being supportive of democracies, but that was very short and it could have been taken out of context, at least the one that I saw. So everything I know about RFK Jr. is that he is a man of high integrity and that he's willing to change his position on matters like the border crisis, which he used to think that a wall was a bad idea, and then he went down there and saw what was going on and said, well, wait a minute, I didn't realize this. So I would stand by and hold your judgment until he has a well thought through answer.
Well, he did say that we should do everything we could to de-escalate the situation. I am hoping he comes out with a detailed response. I was hoping to talk to him about this in Savannah, and we just didn't get a chance, but I'm hoping he comes out with a detailed statement. I will say this, and I'll say this for every candidate in the race. We are seeing a level of pro-Israel, which to me fails to address the fact that Israel is two things. It's a group of people, and then it's a criminal syndicate leadership, which in fact for the last 3 years has been genociding the Israeli people, and now they're genociding the Palestinian people. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're a genocide machine, and I
Right.
have no use for any of them. John Titus and I have been unbelievably critical, and it does seem like every politician in the world is terrified and afraid to say
Right.
that Netanyahu and his bunch are a bunch of criminals. But they also work for a much larger criminal syndicate. Now, I have two problems with what's going on with in Israel. One is genocide, whether it's the Israeli people or the Palestinian people, now it's the Palestinian people. And it's clearly a more visible, brutal form of genocide than what Netanyahu did to the Israeli people, but it's still the same thing. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the US is playing with fire because the Israelis and Netanyahu are people who will blow up a USS Liberty. And, if you send all those boats over to the Mediterranean and these nimnuts blow one up, what do you think is going to happen? I don't see a pathway to victory for the US here. I don't understand why the US is doing what it's doing, other than every politician in Washington is afraid of, the AIPAC form they signed. So we have a criminal syndicate problem in this world, and whether we talk about it in terms of the WHO or financial transaction control and the central bankers or Netanyahu killing people in Israel, it's the same thing. It's the same syndicate. That's what Charlie Stevens calls the rackets. And
Absolutely.
right.
And
And
Whitney Webb calls this the bankers' war. And
right.
absolutely, it is a bankers'
It
war.
is a banker's war. This is a banker's war. The 7 countries in 5 years that Wesley Clark told us about, they didn't get it done. 9/11 was to get the army into the Middle East and to get the 7 countries in 5 years. They didn't get it done, and Netanyahu and the backers are still trying to get that done. So we need a conversation about the real thing here. And there's a difference. This idea of Israel versus Palestine is a complete misframing. Because you got one criminal syndicate and they're killing both sides. And it's genocide. And it's they're gonna keep killing all of us until we get rid of them. Okay, so I'll get off my soapbox. Other, This was also from last week, and I apologize. Catherine was in the car, and so poor recording. Hi, Catherine and John. I live in rural Ohio in a small population, 30,000, relatively poor median income, 40,000, primarily agricultural county. Our county zoning commission has sent out a survey regarding our opinions about implementing smart cities in this county. This is absurd. What kind of incentives are the county personnel, either personally or their county coffers, receiving for promoting smart cities? Boy, you should go in with FOIAs and figure that out. That would be great. Attached is an image of the mailer and a copy of the survey on the county's website. I've intentionally blocked out any identifying information for this specific county so as not to get on anyone's radar. Thank you in advance. What can I tell you? They're coming to every neighborhood on the planet. They want to own and control 100% of the real estate, and they're going to use the WHO, they're going to use climate change, they're going to use all sorts of rules and regulations. There's a war between top down and bottom up, and I, for one, would love for you to dig in and see if you can figure out what the incentive systems are. I'd love to know.
And when Catherine says FOIA, at the state level, in most states, and certainly in Ohio, because I live there, it's called the Open Records Act. Same thing, or almost the same thing.
Okay. Hello, Catherine. Please share the attached newsletter with your subscribers. This is on spatial reality, and it's in the show notes. Everybody can read it. So thank you for sharing. Okay, recommended links. I'm turning it over to you, Carolyn.
Okay, the first one is CDC data confirms the vax can reduce your lifespan by 7% per jab. Now, I didn't keep up on this calculation, but this is this article links to an Epoch Times interview, which is very interesting. Interview with a guy who is an insurance analyst. And he's somebody who's used to looking at data. And he points out that the UK has better, more useful data for many purposes regarding the vaccines and death data. And that because they have the national health system, they are able to look at the data and determine based on someone's vaccine status or based on the nation's vaccine status, how many of the people who've been jabbed or boosted or, you know, whatever stage they are unvaccinated, they can follow that through and look at their mortality. And what it shows is that the mortality of people who got the jab is much higher than for people who were not vaccinated. German data also is much better. In the United States, we find that the states that have the highest percentage of boosted people have higher all-cause mortality, deviations from, you know, excess mortality, have higher excess mortality. This is yet another indication of the dangers of the vaxes. The next one is Zelensky advisor admits government officials are stealing like no tomorrow. And this actually originated with Time magazine. In other words, Time magazine is being quoted. And it says, speaking anonymously to Time magazine, what is alleged to be the top presidential advisor to Zelensky said that the Ukrainian government's efforts to stamp out corruption have proved fruitless, given that they were implemented too late to have any impact, including the firing of Minister of Defense Oleksiy Reznikov. So apparently he's the one being blamed for and may actually be responsible for the corruption. People are stealing like there's no tomorrow, the top advisor said to have told the publication, saying that officials do not feel any fear of engaging in corruption because the firing of Reznikov and others took over 6 months after Zelensky was warned that the defense ministry was drowning in graft. What can I say? Don't send any more money to the Ukraine. Get back what you already sent, if there's any way. Probably not. Okay, the next one. Main shooter, the questions. We got two different submissions from subscribers on the main shooter situation. And I chose the one that was in Giza's Death Star because Joseph Farrell is a compadre of ours. And he says, here's the basic problem with this whole narrative as it keeps being repeated. No one is asking the statistical question, with so many guns out there, why are there not many more such incidents than there actually are? The answer is because conditioning people to do these types of things takes time, technology, technique, and above all, expertise. Once we get right.
Yeah, covert operations are very expensive.
Right. Once we get to that position, then we find out who the real criminals here are. They are those with the access to such technologies and techniques and with the expertise to deploy them. And of course, the money to do it. Right. On this view, Card, who may or may not have killed himself, fits an all too familiar pattern of voices in the head. There are three traditional answers to such claims. One, the voices are due to insanity. Two, the voices are due to demonic activity and possession. Three, the voices are due to the technologies and techniques of mind manipulation.
Right.
So you choose. The next one is Senator Rand Paul calls on the Senate to audit the Fed. He's done it before to no avail, but we support this, so I'm including it. On Wednesday, November 1st, Rand Paul urged the U.S. Senate to vote yes to an amendment to the pending spending bill in Senate, Paul 1217. I don't understand. I guess that's his number, Paul 1217, that would require a full audit of the Federal Reserve within 1 year. Here's the full statement. The Federal Reserve effectively controls the economy, but without scrutiny. No other institution has so much unchecked power. The Fed demonstrated its unlimited authority during the pandemic. The Fed printed money, purchased government-backed securities, and doled out massive amounts of money to favored industries. The result added almost $5 trillion to the Fed's balance sheet, the largest in our history. When Dodd-Frank ordered a limited one-time audit of Fed actions, the Government Accountability Office uncovered that during the financial crisis, the Fed doled out over $16 trillion of domestic and foreign banks. This kind of inflationary bailout should not be kept secret from the public. While the Fed's easy money policies make the rich richer, the side effect is high inflation. As Milton Friedman famously explained, inflation is taxation without legislation. Congress cannot control the Fed's actions, but Fed actions can cost Americans dearly. Just ask any parent who has to feed his or her family during the historically high inflation rates. My amendment would require a full audit of the Fed within 1 year. It is time for the Federal Reserve to operate in a manner that is transparent and accountable to taxpayers. I ask for a yes vote. More power to you, Senator.
Okay, but I just have to point out the problem is not that they're audited. The problem is we have a debt-based currency. So my vote is we just start issuing greenbacks because the most inflationary thing, we have $1 trillion a year of interest expense. Why? We don't need it. We could have just issued greenbacks and had zero interest expense.
But we need to audit the Fed in order to figure out where the money went and get it back.
That's true. So I would say we go back all the way and find that $21 trillion.
Right. And counting. We don't even know how much is really missing.
Well, so the first problem is we owe $33 trillion that we shouldn't owe. And the second is $21 trillion plus is missing. That's just through 2015. Already we've got a $54 trillion hole.
Right.
The central bankers are very expensive.
Okay, the next one is speculation saga continuous. Walter Bodsley speculates on human transtemporal travels. This is very interesting. It's kind of drawn out. He has a couple of books that he recommends, Final Events by Nick Redfern and Demon in the Ecker by Joseph Farrell.
That's the new Farrell one I'm reading right now.
Yeah, speculation on how beings of the underseen world could make themselves manifest if intelligent and other odds and ends. And now Walter's speculation that humans could be doing in this, what humans could be doing in the unseen world that pure materialists don't believe exists. So interesting. Next one, Matthew Crawford and Matt Arrett discuss all things UFO cult with special focus paid to the Church of Scientology and the Remote Viewing Project at Stanford, dubbed the Stargate Project. This is very interesting. And they talk, you know, if you'd said to me, gee, UFO churches, I wouldn't have known what you were talking about. I think that it was something I'd never heard of. But they actually talk about Mormonism as a UFO church and Scientology, of course. And I had no idea Mormonism had anything to do with UFOism.
Well, the Battlestar Galactica is based on the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, and as I said, I had no idea. They also talk about the anti-Semitism aspects of the role of the Jewish bankers, basically saying that the Jews, a lot of Jewish bankers are part of Mr. Global, but it doesn't really have anything to do with the fact that they're Jewish.
The weaponization of anti-Semitism right now is off the charts, and I would really encourage, it's hard to find. We did a Let's Go to the Movies, a fabulous documentary by an Israeli documentary maker who's so talented. It's called Defamation, and it's about the weaponization of anti-Semitism, and I cannot recommend it enough. Because if you look, I'll tell you something, you know, I've had more than a few Jewish friends who are really being terrorized into believing everybody's going to hate them because of anti-Semitism, like telling them, stop listening to your phones. It's just, you know, it's not true. It's just coming from your phones. So I don't know. Check out Defamation. It's really, really good.
Right. Well, and they also, another thing they talk about, which is interesting, is the role of eunuchs in history. For example, in Rome and Russia and China, and the possible connection with current transgender initiatives and attempts to fast track transgender people into power. So
it's a control issue.
Very interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting.
You know, for those of you who are like me or former progressive Democrats, listen to some of this. I included the next one is comment 7. It is a video on YouTube by a man whose name is Pastor James Caddis. He's ethnically Egyptian, and he is an end times rapture guy, what I would call. And I included it not because I agree with him that the world should be destroyed and Antichrist be destroyed and the rapture is coming, but as an exposure of perhaps people who don't know anything about this to that philosophy or religion. And also what he is doing is putting forth an interview that Piers Morgan did. That's what he's talking about. It's from a Zionist Christian point of view regarding the end times, Antichrist, the rapture, etc. Piers Morgan is at the 8-minute mark. And Piers Morgan interviewed the son of alleged son of the Hamas founder. And he says that he was in jail for something he did in connection with Hamas in Israel. And he saw what Hamas was doing from the Israeli point of view or from prison in Israel. And he was really turned off by what Hamas was doing, even though he was the son of the founder of Hamas. And what he said about October 7th is that he was surprised by the scale of the attack and that Hamas would mess with a major country like Israel. With a memory of the Holocaust. He also said it's important to distinguish between the Palestinian cause and the Hamas cause, which he says is different. He says enough is enough. Next will be the next one will be deadlier if Hamas is not destroyed. He thinks a majority of the people in Gaza would be glad if Hamas were destroyed because they have suffered from Hamas. Hamas's lust for power. In that case, the idea of wiping out the Jews would disappear if Hamas were gone. He seems to think, you know, he has nothing against the Israelis, apparently. And he says use of force is the last resort. Really interesting.
If you look at the history of Hamas and the involvement of the criminal syndicate in supporting them, you know, there are a lot of a lot of deep questions here. And I come back to this frame of the criminal syndicate versus the people, all the people.
Right.
Okay, keep going.
The next one is by Greg Manarino, which I think we've seen before in subscriber links. I want to share this with you. So we all know of the Fed President Bostic, who is the president of one of the Fed, Atlanta, I think. So back in October of last year, it was discovered by accident, quote unquote, over a period of several years, some of his personal investing activity inadvertently, quote unquote, happened in periods where it was forbidden by the U.S. central bank ethics rules at the time, and he made millions of dollars in profits. And so the question is it possible that this possibly happened? Bostic said the trades were made by investment managers that he did not directly oversee, and he was unaware of the transactions. He said he has since changed his investment approach to remain within the rules. And I say, that is such BS. I have never heard a worse, you know, dog ate my homework kind of a lie, because anybody in any kind of office of any level has to know what the ethics rules provide and that they cannot do insider trading. You agree with that, Catherine?
So a lot of times you put money in a trust and you have a money manager trading it and you don't know. So I'm just wondering, I don't know the particulars here, but if he's got it in a separate account and the money manager trading it, you know, you're not responsible.
Oh, I can't imagine he wouldn't have said that if that hadn't been the excuse.
Right. I just don't know the particulars, but it is true that if you're a appointee and you have ethics rules, you know them and you make sure it's set up so that it can't be violated.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't usually go for things from the New York Times, but this is actually didn't come directly from the New York Times, but there was an article in the New York Times, why banks are suddenly closing down customer accounts. And they're referring to SARS reports, which is suspicious activity reports that are required to be filed by banks. And suspicious activity report specifically has to be filed for any transactions over, well, that are as high as $10,000 individual transactions. So you can expect that there's a SARS report filed for you if you have done single transactions in that amount. Now, it says federal data on the types of SARS that the banks file show what they worry about most. Last year, banks filing SARS tagged categories, including suspicious checks, concern over the source of funds, and, quote, transactions with no apparent economic, business, or lawful purpose, most often, according to Thomson Reuters. So this is a lesson for people who have bank accounts and are doing controversial things and are afraid of their bank accounts being shut down, as happened to Dr. Mercola and others. It's useful to look at what the categories under the SARS reports are that might be used in order to justify shutting down your account. And this transaction with no apparent economic, business, or lawful purpose seems like a catch-all category. And gee, are they looking at every $10,000 transaction or more to determine whether they think there's an apparent economic, business, or lawful purpose? The answer presumably is yes, but gee, the bank is questioning, you know, how I'm using my money. Yeah, $10,000 isn't all that much.
Someone just, my cousin who's my banker, just printed out the article for me, and I found it waiting for me when I got in last night, so I have it here and I'm going to read it. But it seems to me the banking industry is concerned about how they're going to defend themselves about this. Somebody's worried that they're looking terrible, which they are.
Right. Okay. The next one is just quickly Dr. Merrill Lass from her Substack, which you should absolutely subscribe to. But if you have not done so yet, we have a link. The HUCU, the Pandemic Treaty, complete video, and it is Merrill's talk on the identical agenda of the G20, World Bank, EU, UN, WHO, and USA last night has been made available for viewing, 60 minutes. So it's her interview on those topics. I haven't viewed it yet, but I'm sure it's great. Then the next one, AI entities, digital Ouija boards, and the evil and insane. And this is from Giza Death Star. And it's about Diana Walsh Pasolka, who has a book called Encounters, Experiences with Non-Human Intelligence. She highlights a revolution that's currently underway. For the first time in human history, we are at the cusp of experiencing contact with non-human life forms of all kinds due to technological innovations and research into experience of people at the forefront of this development. She also shares her thoughts on UFO whistleblower claims, her work on the hit Netflix series Encounters, her new position as at the SOL Foundation, and much more. Joseph, after saying that he got a message from a subscriber, and he says usually with subscriber messages along these lines, he has categories of be on the lookout for a warning or don't do this. And he says this is a case where both of those apply. He says, a few years ago, Elon Musk made history by warning people that one of his concerns about artificial intelligence was that it might actually transduce entities that one can only qualify as higher dimensional into the cyber circuity, and that these entities might be colossally powerful and evil. Coming from a man intent on wiring everyone's brains into a neural network, the warning seems at a minimum a bit hypocritical, but it is nonetheless there, and I for one share his concerns. But if you've been paying attention to the issue, there are already reports of odd indications of some sort of sentience, S-E-N-T-I-E-N-C-E, meaning thinkingness, from artificial intelligences, and also, surprise, surprise, that most of these reports involve some element of evil, or at least of foreboding, as the article avers. And it says, the reason I post this, though, is because of a book that's coming out next week, Encounters, Experience with Non-Human Intelligences by Ms. Pasolka. She is a religious studies professor who has made her reputation by investigating UFO culture as an emerging religion. I read Encounters a few weeks back, and it's a banger of a book. You know that Joseph wrote this when he says it's a banger of a book. It, with Pasolka's previous book, American Cosmic, are largely responsible for me adding a chapter about the false enchantment of the technology world, of which UFO culture and messianic approaches to AI are part. If you have not paid attention to this stuff as a spiritual and religious phenomenon, you are missing something important happening right under our noses. So yep.
I think this whole thing is so important, because right. I do think AI and software gives access to interdimensional intelligence. And I do think it's phenomenally, phenomenally dangerous.
Right. Now, there's talk of a woman that she calls Simone, who is a top investor in AI and other tech fields. One thing that might startle you, it did me, this is coming from Joseph, in coming to the UFO and related fields, is that most of those involved in it at a high level do not believe these things are beings from other planets. Rather, they believe that there is some kind of discarnate superior intelligences from other dimension. I mentioned this in London this week to an investor from California who said, yes, everybody he knows in Silicon Valley thinks that, and some even hold rituals to summon these intelligences.
Are they out of their mind?
That last part must not be a quote from Joseph, because he doesn't go to London. So that must be from Pasolka. But very interesting. It's really worth a read. And here's more. Joseph says, you don't say, discarnate superior intelligence. plasma life hypothesis, anyone? Plasma life? And here comes the clincher, one that again echoes Elon Musk's concern. And this is a quote. Last week, I sent Dr. Pasulka some interview questions about encounters. In them, I posed a query about Simone's view and described AI as a high-tech Ouija board. Dr. Pasulka said she hadn't thought about it that way, but yes, that's pretty much what Simone and many others in that field are talking about. And that, now emphasis added, AI is a vector that allows for the exchange of information with discarnate higher beings. Joseph's high octane speculation is, who is to say that this is not already happening? Who is to say that artificial intelligence is something in the future when there are indicators from such stories that it is already here, and more importantly, that the high and mighty technocrats in the field are already involved with it, and if the article's assertions be true, are even performing rituals to summon it or in conjunction with its instructions.
So I agree with the poster. It's absolutely already here. They're absolutely doing it, and they are trying to summon it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, well, that's it.
Well, this is why we need to summon the divine. And speaking of summoning the divine, if you look at the next section, take action, we have one post which I absolutely love. So somebody came up with Cash is King Halloween costume with an $8 crown and a cardboard box and currency printouts. This is fabulous. Cash is King sign in front of house written on the bottom of kayak, giving out dollar bills with paper messages tapped to the back. It says, cash is king, why pay with cash? And then it's got a list of the reasons. To save your favorite businesses money on transaction fees, so no one can track your purchases, to keep your location anonymous, so no one can control what you buy, to make it easier to only spend what you have, pictures attached. And there's this great, so look, she's wearing, our subscriber is wearing a crown, and then she's got a billboard with dollar bills, which I guess is what she had. Handed out. I just love this. I just think this is fantastic.
Well, and think about it. If you want somebody to read something, put it on a dollar bill.
Yeah.
Mom going through the Halloween candy is going to come across a dollar bill and is going to read it. So
I'm sure this is somebody who got a lot of converts.
Right.
Right. This is so great. We're so impressed and we're so proud of you. We just can't. And that's called taking action in a way that has a big, big impact and gets the message out. And you have a lot of fun. It's
right.
Fun.
Integrating it with your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So huge, I don't know, big, big gold Solari star. Thank you so much for that. That is fantastic.
And communicating with younger people, which is really important.
Yeah. So they reached 150 kids. Okay. Trick or treat your cash. Okay, well, that's it for this week, Carolyn. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Solari Report for it. I ask Catherine and the Solari team. We'll be Carolyn and I will be back next week. And again, as always, thank you for your questions. You have a great day.